Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin.
Our president and CEO, Beth White, likes to talk about parks as a great equalizer. They're, you know, a civic space. So I think that's some, when you talk about the less obvious effects of park space in a community, it's a gathering space. It's a place where you see your neighbors, meet your neighbors, feel like your neighborhood is at your scale, at your level, and you can know the people around you. And I think that's really important to mental health. It's important to feeling safe, feeling like you're part of a, you know, community identity, a shared identity.
Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we're delighted to bring you episode 124, Changing the Landscape, People, Parks, and Power. Here at the Hogg Foundation, we're quite fond of the phrase social determinants, as in social determinants of health, social determinants of mental health. And it's been kind to us. Our focus on the social determinants of mental health has opened up new horizons for both our grant making, as well as our efforts to illustrate for the public what mental health is, how it shows up in everyday life, and what it looks like for different people. In some ways, social determinants is just a fancy way of saying something that's pretty intuitive when you think about it, that mental health and well-being is radically tied to place, the histories of places, how physical space is configured, by whom and for whom, is something that we need to look at when we start to talk about mental health and well-being. In particular, access to the outdoors is a great example of a social determinant. That is, it is something that some are able to take for granted, that others have to struggle to obtain, but is tied to health and well-being just the same. When the Hogg Foundation launched the Communities of Care Initiative in 2018, we took that opportunity to support a project, the Healthy Outdoor Communities Initiative. Healthy Outdoor Communities seeks to overcome the barriers to equitable use of public parks and green spaces that are faced by Houston children and families, particularly children and families of color. Like all of the Communities of Care, or COC, grantees, Healthy Outdoor Communities is a multi-sector collaborative, bringing together resources, knowledge, creative pilot programming, and people power, with the goal of improving mental health outcomes, resilience, and quality of life for underserved children and families. Here to discuss the project and its hopes for Houston are our two guests. Sheila Savannah is director of Prevention Institute, the organization that coordinates the Communities of Care Initiative. She is joined by Kelly Burnett, activation and volunteer manager of Houston Parks Board and the coordinator of the Healthy Outdoor Communities Initiative. Sheila, Kelly, welcome. We are so glad to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah. So my first question is for the both of you. It won't surprise most people that there's a disparity when it comes to access to outdoor spaces between Black people and other people of color and whites. So what does the evidence say about, you know, how stark the disparity is? And you can speak generally or just, you know, in terms of Houston and the consequences of the disparity.
Well, you know, we know that the value of parks and green space and healthy environment has a tremendous impact on health. So I think when we look at the health disparities, we have to also look at what have been the investments in those communities. So in Houston, there's the health department has data that shows it used to be almost a Y pattern that followed the freeway system. And now it's kind of changed to what they call an inverted C or arrow pattern. And there's just certain communities, you know, across the north end of the city, down the east, eastern corridor, and then in the southern portion of the city, and then a little bit toward Fort Bend and Gulfton and Ailey, that are communities that just struggle. And we also know that those are communities that have less trees, they have less large parks. And that you have to start looking at how that correlates to health outcomes. You know, it's been long known that people interact differently with parks and green space, but it has an impact on their health, whether they're running or walking or using it to gather or gardening or fishing. It just has all of these health benefits. And so I think when we look at those historic investments in parks, in green space, when we look at disproportionate placement of dumping sites locally, mm-hmm. we have to really think about how is that impacting the health of those communities. And that's why we're really glad to be partnering with Houston Parks Board and the collaborative that they lead to try to change some of that here.
Yeah, I like that you start with talking about the environment and answering that question, because it's really easy to, I see it most often flipped, where people say, well, on our Bayou Greenways, why are the ones in certain neighborhoods always active and why are others not? Why are some communities embracing it? Why are some not? And you can look at the statistics of, you know, the health disparities, obesity and diabetes and all, and, you know, heart disease, some of these outcomes that we know exist, life expectancy. But it is more than just a choice. There's all these barriers that have added up decade over decade, sometimes nefarious, sometimes just by where it is. And I think it's going to take a lot of people, a lot of collaborations to be able to start to chip away at that, because the gaps are huge, 20-year life expectancy differences.
I mean, everyone, you know, lists the scenic qualities of a place, right, as being high on their list of characteristics that make for a desirable community, you know, whether it comes to, you know, buying a home, or just being. And so it's probably common sense for a lot of people that, you know, that lacking access to outdoor spaces is undesirable. But one thing I'm wondering about is some of the less obvious effects of lack of access to green spaces, that it would take doing the kind of collaborative work that Houston Parks Board is doing to really be able to see and track.
Sure. I mean, the kinds of things that Kelly mentioned, like obesity, when people don't have access to healthy, safe places to walk, they don't form the habits of walking. Their children don't form those habits of walking. When people lose access to be able to grow, or, you know, really have their food where they're growing part of their food or connected to that food cycle, you know, they begin to lose that behavior, as that's part of how we get food. And so I think, you know, it's the scenic characteristics, but our environment drives our behavior. And so whether we have are in an area that's walkable, determines whether we get in our car when we have to go somewhere. Where the buses are reliable, then people have stronger tendencies to be able to use active transportation. And so I think too often we think about green space as only scenic, but how do we really make sure it's a vital part of how we live our lives? You know, because I think when we think about healthy, active lifestyles, it's so reliant and interrelated with the green space and environment around us.
We were so lucky to have Florence Williams speak at the Houston Parks Board luncheon in October. And she is the author of The Nature Fix. And it's this book that really dives into the positive effects of nature on the brain and how it's all, you know, physically your stress hormone levels go down. Your, you know, I think it's 45 minutes, you experience better cognitive performance if you are going outside for 45 minutes every day. And it's, you know, it adds up over time. We see a lot, our president CEO, Beth White, likes to talk about parks as a great equalizer. They're, you know, a civic space. So I think that's some, when you talk about the less obvious effects of park space in a community, it's a gathering space. It's a place where you see your neighbors, meet your neighbors, feel like your neighborhood is at your scale, at your level, and you can know the people around you. And I think that's really important to mental health. It's important to feeling safe, feeling like you're part of a, you know, community identity, a shared identity. So I think that's some of the things that come to mind where you're, you know, we know the science behind it, where you're physically calmed and the walking really helps you physically feel better, but you have some of these other effects when you add other humans into it, the social science adds up as well. And so that's one part of it. If you have parks and trails near you, the metric is usually within a 10-minute walk. And we do our park score every year. Houston Parks Board does the calculations, how well are we doing against our peer cities? And it is near impossible to do it in a city that's as sprawling as Houston, but it's something that we aspire to do. Every single person should be within a 10-minute walk. But as we've worked in healthy outdoor communities and talking with community members in Third Ward and Acres Homes, even when that trail or that park is within a 10-minute walk, if that walk in a park feels stressful, if you're worried about a stray dog coming up to you, or you're worried about, you know, what the person on the corner is going to do to you and your kids, well, then those benefits go away. You're less likely to use it and you're not feeling relaxed when you are out there. So Houston Parks Board and Healthy Outdoor Communities is trying to look at some of these other barriers and what access to parks and trails really means. Because it's one thing to build it, it's another thing to make sure that it's accessible.
One thing I admire about Healthy Outdoor Communities work is it's asking the question, how do you want to use your green space? Mm. And residents are really starting projects that help build those bridges. And that's really important to access.
Yeah, it's their space. And I think that's the bottom line. And that, you know, I'm here and Jennifer Boley, who's the director of Healthy Outdoor Communities, and I support her on it. And the whole collaborative kind of as a core team, that's our job, is to make what the community wants happen. It's not about, you know, let's bring XYZ to every park in these two communities. It's, well, what do y'all want to see? And, you know, that lines up with what others in the community have said. Let's do it. So it's been really fun to see those conversations happen.
So Sheila, these next couple of questions are for you. So I'm just curious about, you know, why it is the Prevention Institute is prioritizing park equity as much as it is. And in particular, PI recently published a report that, you know, inspired the name of this podcast, Changing the Landscape, People, Parks, and Power. And I'd love to know more about, you know, what the major findings from that report were.
Sure. You know, and People, Parks, and Power is, we see it as almost a growing movement What we found is that as parks space, and we've talked about all the open, the impacts, the health impacts of open space and parks and trails, it's so tremendous. It has to be seen as a cornerstone of a thriving community. And most of our work at Prevention Institute focuses on changing the community environment in order to change health outcomes. So really, how do we put in place upstream long-term solutions? And so whereas park projects, one community at a time, does some very important work, changing the kinds of policies that drive investment, that drive who designs parks, that helps people think long-term about the connectivity of green space, really helps us make sure that those kinds of investments are in place in Black and Brown and low-income communities to reverse the disinvestment that's occurred for, like Kelly said, years, decades. So People, Parks, and Power is really about looking at, yes, what's happening one neighborhood at a time, but even more importantly, scaling that to say, what are the public practices? What are the public policies? What are the investments that are lacking? And how does power building at the community level help residents know what they deserve, what they need, what they can demand be invested in their community?
Yeah, and so we in philanthropy, you know, we talk a lot about theory of change. And so one question that I had was, you know, what is the theory of change for how investments in green space, you know, can result in greater community well-being?
So the outcomes are, the long-term outcomes are things like increased power and capacity among communities that are traditionally disinvested in to assure that they know what to require of their public systems. You know, to really champion and achieve local policy change, like increased resources for parks in high need communities. The community engagement, you know, with agencies, the kind of work that Kelly was talking about, you know, anti-displacement, and how can green space and community engagement in that development of green space really drive back displacements because it creates deeper roots in those communities. So we really want to see, you know, reduced disinvestment, increased investment, but all of that being driven by the power of community. You know, some of it comes across in voting, some of it comes across in really direct advocacy for those kinds of investments that, yes, place parks in my community, but even more importantly, say, I want more parks in communities that don't have them now. You know, so really being able to take action and making sure that that action impacts those that are most disinvested at the current time. Some of the indicators of progress, and if you think about a theory of change, you have the long-term outcomes, but some of the indicators of progress are communities that are most impacted by park and green space inequities, leading the efforts and defining the problem and creating the solutions. And are we really looking geographically at where we place our public dollars? You know, those are the kinds of indicators of change that tell us we're going in the right direction. Are there representatives in environmental justice movements that become more diverse? You know, it's been a historically a very white-led movement, you know, in terms of the environment. And so often we think, well, you know, are Black and Brown and people of color not interested in the environment? It's not that, but those movements haven't always resulted in investments in our community. And so as we drive investments in Black and Brown and communities that are disinvested in, then those residents, those experts, those researchers will become more deeply involved in those movements. So that's kind of part of that theory of change. How do we build power and investment in Black and Latino low-income communities and marginalized groups so that they become a driving force to help build equity in park and green space investment? We know that exclusionary practices, redlining, other things that are race-based policies have led to these long-term disinvestments, have led to the kind of siting of dump sites, the placement of freeways, you know, and it's going to take a lot of people, a lot of effort to really reverse the impacts of that lack of investment. So the theory of change really says that we have to really start with a ground up approach.
Kelly, because you are the project coordinator of the Healthy Outdoor Communities, I'm sure that our listeners would like to know a little bit more about you, your role with Houston Parks Board, and anything else you'd like to share about your involvement and what it means to you personally.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm the Activation and Volunteer Manager at Houston Parks Board. When I started, we used the term activation internally to describe efforts in community engagement and events, especially when they aren't related to project-based outreach. So it's once it's built, or if it's been there since 1950, or if it's been there since we just finished it in, you know, 2015, how do we make sure that all people feel welcome to use it and know that it's there for them? So that was the kind of initial, the catalyst for my job was we were just about, we were nearing the end of Bayou Greenways. And that's a system that, continuous park system along Houston's major bayous. And it ties together a lot of great parks in the Houston area, ultimately 150 miles of connected trails and green spaces. And it's been a project since 2012 for Houston Parks Board and really defining moment for us as an organization. And it kind of flipped the script for us. We became stewards of the space when we had previously really just been sort of the builders and the contractors and working with communities in that way, but we'd never really maintained a space. So now we're looking at it through a lens of, okay, we've got to maintain these spaces. And like I said earlier, certain bayous are better used than others. And it's the same things that we've been speaking about that lead to those inequities. And so for us, it was at a really nice moment that Jennifer Boley came to us with the idea for Healthy Outdoor Communities. And it's a collaborative approach to park access and equity in communities. And we ended up landing on Third Ward and Acres Homes as the space we would work on, well, hopefully work on first, but it would be the focus of Healthy Outdoor Communities as it is now. Those are both communities that are along Bayou Greenways, and they have a lot of great park opportunities. And they're both in the original five complete communities. So we knew we could rely on existing data that was there about health disparities, about what the community's looking for in terms of parks, but in terms of a lot of different things, walkability, access to healthy food, education, a lot of the things that we know it will take to get to a healthy community. And we never can look at something in terms of just parks, just access to parks, because there's so many other things in this community that that make it feel safe and accessible. So, you know, Healthy Outdoor Communities has become this collaborative initiative to promote equitable access to nature and green space. It's my dog, Craig, in Third Ward and Acres Home. So we're on a mission to really support good health and well-being in children, youth, and families.
And I love that, Kelly, you talk about these are the first, You know, I think this kind of work is really about momentum, you know, and those residents and their activation in Acres Homes and Third Ward has really sparked a lot of ideas among other communities of care grantees as well.
It is important to stress that all of the communities of care grantees, you know, they basically it's a learning community, and they learn from one another, and they all have, you know, similar and overlapping concerns on all of their radar screens. And so I'm sure that others are finding their own opportunities to address outdoors. Kelly, I am wondering about, you know, the success measures that Healthy Outdoor Communities is using to gauge the impact that it's having. Sheila, because Prevention Institute is coordinating, you know, the evaluation activities for this initiative, you can chime in on this question as well if you like.
I was hoping I could tee up Sheila on this, for us, the evidence is clear, and I'm glad we started there, that, you know, 30 minutes or more outside per day improve health outcomes. So we're starting from the understanding that we have that. So our measurements are of tools, the measurements are of the tools we use. How are people advocating for parks? Who's participating? Who's coming to community-led park programs and events, and, you know, kind of in what ways are we being successful in encouraging healthier and more active lifestyles? In general, sometimes that's anecdotally, how many people are you seeing on the Bayou Greenways every day? We have a lot of people who walk every morning on that trail, so that's a pretty easy anecdotal tool we can use. We know how many people are attending events. We can get the zip codes and the demographics of those. And are those changing? Are we being successful in bringing everyone to the table? And that's been important. In addition to those, which have been standard for Houston Parks Board across the board, we're really excited with Communities of Care. We're working with an evaluation team to track points of change at an organizational level, at the community level, at, you know, individually, are people feeling like they're experiencing this change? And that's new to me. So that's been really a great opportunity for all of us on the collaborative, all the organizations that have come to the table for Healthy Outdoor Communities, to learn about what that means. We're often talking to our evaluation lead, you know, we're so excited. We just, you know, we launched a walking club in Highland Park, and it was, you know, with Memorial Hermann, and one of our community engagement liaisons is going, and we're just so excited. And we know that that's a touch point that we'll have in the future. And our evaluation lead reminded us, well, hey, that's a change that your collaborative brought about. It's not just about these touch points you'll have in the future. The fact that you just got one off the ground is something to track in itself. So I think that's another great thing about Communities of Care, is that we are all learning together, like you said, a learning community. And it would be neat, Sheila, if you could talk more about that evaluation team and how that all came about.
Sure. I mean, we have an amazing evaluation team that really represent number of universities in the area, number of disciplines, both from education and public health and the environment. And, you know, so some of the success measures are very much process. As a collaborative, are the members of that coalition really understanding all the factors in those communities that are impacting the health of children and their families? And are they beginning to gain the agency to create change? Because, you know, what we see is, as members of that community don't see themselves as just passive consumers or of their community environments. So are they not only joining the walking clubs, but are they also sparking the ideas to say, I can do additional walking clubs? And then at the systems level, are they starting to have relationships where they can resource walking clubs or really kind of drive more investment or policies or practices that allow families in those areas to have active lifestyles? And I'm just using walking as an example because there's so many different ways and so many ideas coming out of the coalition. So I think part of the learning that we're doing is what do people want in their community to be healthier? And what are they willing to take action around? And so that's part of the discovery, because when you think about health and mental health, it's really around what will people find agency in and build peer support around. Because we've seen that community is the unit of health. So when people start creating healthy environments, I think that's probably the greatest measure of success.
Community is the unit of health. Say it again. Yeah, that's good.
I like that. Yeah, that was great. So this question really is for the both of you, but Kelly in particular, I think. I'm just wanting any personal stories or accounts, whether things you've witnessed yourself or secondhand, that attest to the impact that you are having and that this initiative is having.
I think one of the lessons learned has been the simplicity of what we can do to make this happen. At times it feels so daunting to change these issues that are so much bigger than us. But in an effort, Healthy Outdoor Communities, in an effort to really demonstrate where we were going and continue to build trust in the community, we decided to do pilot funding projects. So we had yet to move into a time where we're actively doing events and programs that the community was leading, but we were at a point where we felt we had enough data to go out on a limb and say, well, what do you guys want to see? And when we put money towards it, we put $1,000 mini supply grants out there. We got applications from the community, from schools, from Boy Scout troops, from all sorts of nonprofit organizations, or we even allowed just groups of community members to come forward, which is unusual when we're talking about funding like this. And it was small scale, but we were so excited to see the progress that we made just by that. In terms of, yes, we did build a lot of trust, and we did see people start to come to the table more because we invested in it up front. And now that school principal is coming to our meetings. And now, the head of the civic association in Third Ward is, coming to our meetings. But I think it's, one example was in University Village Park in Third Ward. It's a new pocket park that the community advocated for, got the ear of their councilwoman, got support of the community, and flipped a public lot that was really just vacant into a park space. And it's so small. It's just one house lot, what used to be just one home. But we did $1,000 grant for supplies. They did a park pop-up, and we could not get the kids home for dinner. Like, they would not go, they would not leave the park. The sun's going down. And, that's the kind of thing that we all grew up doing, but this generation is probably the first to not really have that experience quite as often. So I think that was really cool, that just with a few lawn games and, music and some free food, we really kind of made that park feel like it was supposed to be. Friends of Riverside Park did a huge event in Riverside Park, which is in Third Ward. They did a movie night. And it's part of a series, and we help fund now they actually own the projector and the screen, so they can do this on a regular basis. They did it in July, and their little girls came up to Sharon Evans Brooks, who runs Friends of Riverside Park. Well, can we come back tomorrow? What movie are we watching tomorrow? And you're like, okay, like, hold on, these girls had never been in the park before and seen anything like this. in their community. Maybe they've driven across town and done it somewhere else, but never right there in their backyard. And it's like, when are we doing it next? So I think that's been the most rewarding, is seeing the youth get so excited about it, because you know they're going home and they're pushing their parents to, when are we going back to the park? When can we do this? And I think that starts to become that catalyst that can start to bring, well, now those parents can come to the, you know, they can come to our meetings, the collaborative meetings for healthy outdoor communities, and help us make decisions about where those funds are going next. We can say, well, we tested this project in Riverside and in University Village. Here are our results. Do y'all feel like we need to do this again? Yes. And we move forward with it in years to come, and we can make it bigger, we can make it better, or we stay at the same level. And if that's successful, people come out for $1,000 little party, let's do it. Sometimes it doesn't have to be all of this, but it starts the ball rolling and you build advocates. So that's my fun little story.
And you're building multiple generations of park lovers, which yeah. is really cool.
Right? Because the love starts at that age. We talked about that in our focus groups. That's how we started the conversation. What's your favorite memory in an outdoor space? And it worries me if kids don't have that. They don't have that. They don't build that connection and that value.
Okay, that is a perfect segue, because I actually intend to do a follow-up pretty soon that will focus more on younger people. And the stakes for this, or, you know, the stakes for them when it comes to, you know, access to outdoor spaces. I would happily take any recommendation that you might be able to give me on who to reach out to and interview after we're done, because I've already made up my mind, and this is also tied to, you know, the reading that I've been doing about you know, young people and how the climate crisis is mm-hmm. impacting them emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's definitely merits its own episode. So guest referrals. I'd love to get them.
I'll mention it to Roosevelt, because some of the speakers from the Saturday talked about the importance of environmental solutions.
Yeah, she's referring to the Young Minds Matter conference that we just held, and the wonderful youth summit that took place just this past Saturday. Yeah, a good time was had by all. More to come on Young Minds Matter as well, for those who are listening. Okay, so Sheila, Kelly, we really do appreciate you being able to take the time to talk to us about healthy outdoor communities. We are so lucky to have you as partners in Houston, and good luck with it all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
As I said in the intro, Communities of Care was launched by the Hogg Foundation in 2018. Since then, the initiative has been supporting collaborative approaches to mental health and well-being in the Houston and Harris County area. Throughout the coming months, we'll be documenting the impact of COC and the wonderful work of its grantees. In episode 119, we got to know one of our COC grantees' first 3 years through the eyes of its Houston Regional Director, Christy Serrano. First 3 years works to support the social and emotional development of infants and toddlers. Here's a listen.
I'm a new mom. I have a 9-month-old, and you know, I was passionate about this work before becoming a mom, but now that I am a mom, it is so real to me, not just a living, breathing baby that is going to be a hopefully thriving, happy, healthy adult with lots of healthy relationships and, you know, success in her own way. And so that makes it very real for me, and it makes me even think about how hard it is to parent, to be a caregiver, in not only in this time, but at any time. And that there needs to be even more resources and support for families who have young children. being someone that has resources and support, you know, I'm grateful every day and for what I'm able to provide and the space and time I'm able to dedicate to being a parent. But I know that's not reality for, you know, hundreds of thousands of families in this country. So
I've included links to this episode in the show description, so please check it out. And that's it for this episode. If you have comments or if there's anything that you would like to share with us about the podcast, feel free to reach out at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu. Especially thoughtful comments will be acknowledged during a future episode. Production assistance by Veronica Rodriguez and Anna Harris. And as ever, I couldn't do this without the support of my friends and colleagues at the Hogg Foundation. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave us a review and subscribe to us on the podcast app of your choice. You can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Spotify. Thanks for joining us.